Welcome to the instruction period. These will actually be the final lot of instructions. Some of you may be wondrously relieved to hear that. And others may actually delight in listening to the instructions, even though you may have heard them many times. It's interesting because I never used to enjoy giving instructions when I began teaching. And then I thought, why not? Why do I not enjoy this? And so then I began to explore until I found instructions that really, really resonated with me. And sometimes looking back on my own life as a meditator, I wish that the instructions had been spelled out rather more clearly. So this is what I'm endeavoring to do when I speak about it. And now, as you can sense and see, I have great enthusiasm for instructions. And I love to encourage people to inquire, to see, to investigate, to look, to trust your own experience as you sit and embark on this great journey of meditation practice. So today, being the final day, the tendency of mind is to rush to the future. You may have noticed already that planning mind has begun to come. The mind of fantasy, of projection. And it becomes slightly harder to keep the attention on the present and just seeing, just hearing, just walking, just listening, just eating. So we have to understand ourselves. We have to look and go, can I simply be with the totality of my life as it is? As it's come to be, in its suchness, the Buddha said, in its suchness, as it is, right now, today. So as we sit, can we just be mindful of the breath? Can we just be mindful of the myriad thoughts that arise? And can we do it in a way where we don't impose the self upon what is naturally present? Sometimes it helps just to shift the perception. And these instructions are given often using the word I shall breathe in. Experiencing the whole body of breath. We could actually change it just to breathing in. I experience the whole body of breath. And you know, somebody came to me on the retreat and she said, and I think I remember correctly, she said, I had the thought or the insight that instead of trying to be mindful of each breath, that perhaps I could just let life breathe me. Let life breathe me. And I thought, how wonderful is that as an instruction? Just to allow the very natural process of the breathing to be as it is. So, if you like, one way of taking the I out of it is to change the way we even express it to ourselves. So rather than say, I am breathing, and I'm in charge and in control, we could say, there's just breathing. Right now there's the knowing of this breath. There's the knowing of silence. There's the knowing of the vast stillness. Even with movement, you see, we can get a sense of the stillness and the movement. With silence, we get, or with sound, we get a sense of the vast silence in which all the sound can be known and sits. So rather than see from this very limited standpoint of I, me, and mine, we begin to just experience life as breathing, as walking, as seeing, as hearing, as smelling, as feeling. We directly experience in a non-dual way. So we no longer divide the world into me and the world, me and the other. There is just the simplicity of sight, of sound, of smell, of taste, of touch, and thought. This is the Buddha's teaching. It says, turn the attention to that. So just for some revision, there's mindfulness with breathing. And the first foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of the body, and we use the breath as a way of being with all the sensations that occur in the body as we breathe. The other way we can be mindful of the body, of course, is what you may have done in some of the guided meditations, being very mindful and steady in the face of all the sensations that occur as we pay attention to all the different areas of the body and sweep through the body. Sometimes we can go from head to toe, sometimes from toe to head. And there's, of course, a very famous technique made famous by around the world by Goenkaji, who taught this particular technique of sweeping through the body. So this is another way we can, another technique that we can use in terms of accessing our natural wisdom and just to see the body as body. The Buddha says we see the body in the body, or the body as body. Second of the foundations is the world of feeling. And just to refresh your mind, the instructions were about breathing in experiencing joy, breathing in experiencing pleasure or happiness, breathing in experiencing the mental formations, so the thoughts that come into the mind and our feelings in relationship to that, and breathing in calming, using the breath to calm the mental formation, and to breathe out, calming the mental formation. It's very important that we understand and notice the moments of freedom that we experience each day. So we're taught to experience and see the different feelings, pleasant and unpleasant. We notice liking and disliking. And the practice is one of equanimity, of being steady with the feeling of liking and disliking. So not chasing after liking, not contracting from disliking, but rather having equanimity and being steady with the whole vast range of our feeling world. We're not suppressing the feeling. We're actually being with the feeling, very close to it. So we're not standing back and go, all those feelings, I don't want to know about them. Or distancing ourselves from life. But rather, we're utterly intimate with the feeling, but without holding on to it and grasping and saying, it's my feeling and I don't like it. Or it's my feeling and I want it and I want more. And the second I have a pleasant experience in meditation, what happens? We want more. And what happens to the pleasant feeling? Gone. Vanished. Disappeared. Because the I has come and gripped. So with our feeling world, there's a great skill in learning to be with it. To be with it with equanimity, to be with it with a heart and mind of non-grasping, so not clinging anywhere. And then we don't deny the feeling world. And our life is rich with all kinds of feelings, because there are unpleasant feelings, but there's also a huge range of pleasant feelings, serenity, peace. There are sublime feelings. The third foundation is mindfulness of the mind states. So experiencing all the kinds of thoughts we have. Our opinions, our views, our ideas, our judgments. So again, being rather steady in the face of that and shining the light of awareness onto what's actually happening. So mindfulness and awareness illuminate what's actually occurring. And then we get to see our habitual tendencies, our tendency to greed perhaps, or our tendency to negativity, our tendency to anger, our tendency to self-criticism, our tendency to despair, our tendency to a sense of hopelessness. So the mindfulness illuminates it. And then, of course, the next step is not grasping anywhere, not holding on to anything. And as we start to do that, we get to see how we fabricate, how we put together thoughts, views, opinions, and ideas, and that this putting together with the mind is, and the way that we do it and cling to it, is actually one of the great sources of our suffering. We put together with the mind certain beliefs based on our past experience. And we identify our background, where we've come from, how our life is. And we heard last night in a rather beautiful inquiry the beginning of an investigation into identity. When we move to a new country and a new culture, it illuminates the beliefs that we hold. It shows us our own. And we start to see that, well, perhaps there's another way of doing things. And then we question and we go, well, what do I want to keep from my past? What's valuable and precious? And what do I want to let go of? And when we start to do that more and more and more, we get to be with perhaps other people from different cultures and countries. And then we see, well, actually, these other people are different from me. there's, if you like, a commonness in our humanity. And then, of course, the sense of who we are, the sense of our identity starts to be less strong, less fixed, less set, less substantial. And when we really see, we see that there is no division. We touch that which is indivisible, we see that the differences are just that. The differences in background and upbringing. These differences occur because of causes and conditions. That's all. If I were brought up somewhere else other than Australia, I would have different causes and conditions. That's all. So we have to look, we have to see, and we have to say, okay, what's most important? How do I really want to be? What is my deepest ethic about life? How do I really want to be? So these are the questions. So the next kind of step, if you like, in our practice can include some inquiry. And we can take some inquiry questions. We can reflect on them in our sittings. So another way of sitting, yet another lot of instructions, is we can come in and we sit for 5-10 minutes and we focus the mind, do some mindfulness of breathing until we feel reasonably steady. And then we can work with an inquiry question. We can work with, what is this? Meaning, it's a very famous inquiry question. What is this meaning? What is this life? What is this consciousness? What is this? Or who am I? Or what is love? Or what is peace? We can reflect on life and death. So we can take up the question. Can I, while living, know death? So these kinds of questions we can contemplate and reflect in our meditation practice. We can really inquire rather deeply into the whole nature of this life. What is truth? What is reality? And these reflections, these contemplations can take many years of practice, and they're precious and they're valuable. And when we inquire, and perhaps we have an insight about it, then we need to live our life accordingly, live our life according to our deepest understandings. So, a message from me. Please live your entire life in accordance with your deepest understanding, with your deepest spiritual experience. This is a really important thing to do. So if you have a wonderful experience, please reflect on it. Take from it the honey, the essence of it, and let that shape your life. Apply that to your life. Until your life really loosens up and frees up. And I began saying a little while ago that it's important that we notice the moments of freedom in this life. That we start to practice not only noticing the problematic, because when we sit, initially anyway, we try to be mindful of our mind, and what we notice is the problem. We notice where we're stuck. we notice the difficulty. And that difficulty is usually accompanied by uncomfortable feelings in the body. So what I'd also like to teach you, and I know I've said it many times already, I'm going to say it one more time, please keep noticing every single moment in your day when there is no problem, where there is the absence of suffering, where there is already peace, where there is already freedom. We don't have to do anything, we just have to notice it. And the more we incline the mind to the freedom, the more that becomes alive. And as we do that more and more and more, the problematic rather naturally dissolves. As we face our freedom, our fears begin to dissolve. And so this too is a very important practice, inclining the mind to the absence of any difficulty, noticing it, being aware of it. And then after that, joy starts to run through the body. Just comes. Just comes. And it's a natural joy. And joy and ease, of course, are two of the factors of awakening. So it is important to have fun. It is important to laugh. When we laugh, what happens to the sense of self? I, me and mine, it's gone. The whole being's loosened up when we laugh. So joy, ease, and calmness are precious qualities that we need to bring to our practice. We need to cultivate them. We need to know them. And the more we know that, the more those wonderful, beautiful qualities of calmness, serenity, joy, peace become our life. Freedom comes our life. And the teachings are about the recognition and the realization of the end of suffering. They're not about just perpetuating our suffering by remaining stuck in it. And just to reinforce this particular instruction from the third foundation of mindfulness, it's I shall breathe in, liberating the heart and mind. I shall breathe out, liberating the heart and mind. It's a beautiful instruction. And in a way, when we start with that sense of, or intention of just sitting in freedom, with freedom, we're already there, we're already free. We don't have to sit to reach anything. So just the attitude of saying, well, okay, I'm going to sit right now in freedom, is sometimes just enough to be released from all that's problematic. So the attitude is important. The intention, this is what I'm going to do. As much as possible, I'm just going to sit right now. The freedom of the heart and mind. And when there's freedom of the heart and mind without holding anywhere, the great beauty of this life is known. And finally, mindfulness of the Dhamma. And yesterday we contemplated impermanence, we contemplated the fading away of our desires, the fading away of the problematic, fading away of negativity and ill will, and the fading away of our confusion. and third in the series of directions for mindfulness of the Dharma is I shall breathe in, contemplating cessation. So, contemplating the endings. Contemplating the endings of many things. So we see the ending of the breath. And then we're not breathing in and we're not breathing out. And then there's that wonderful vast space. Spaciousness. And stillness. And then without us even asking, the next in-breath comes. So we're not making it happen. We're not doing it. It's just life breathing us. There is the breath. There is breathing. That's all. And when we see it like that, there's a natural wisdom that comes with the endings. Because we also see the ending of our pain. We see the ending of the uncomfortable feelings. We see the ending of our struggle. We see the ending of our constructs of how we should be meditating. We think, oh, I should be a really good meditator and I want to be different from how I am. But when we start to look, we see, oh, I can even give up thinking like that. I can even give up thinking that I have to change and be something different. And then we just see life as it is. As it's come to be. This is the wisdom of cessation. And then of course the final teaching of the 16 couplets is about relinquishment, letting go. And it's the heart and the core of the Dharma teachings. To let go of holding to any idea, any construct. Any form of clinging whatsoever. And when we do that, consciousness expands, it opens out. And freedom is known. I want to tell you just one very brief story. And it's about a friend of mine who was dying from cancer. He was one of the Dharma teachers in Australia. He was a teacher in the Zen tradition and also in the Insight tradition. He was unfortunately diagnosed with a cancer of the bowel and died from it. During this whole process, he had the most extraordinary steadiness and equanimity. It was beautiful. There were, of course, many times when he was in a lot of pain. There were many times when he was more or less okay, when he could still sit and still teach and still be with us. But overall, you'd have to say it's quite a difficult thing to face. So a couple of days before he died, I went to see him at his house. He lived about 4 hours drive from me. Another friend and I went to say goodbye. And so there he was, sitting up in his bed. And by this time, the cancer had spread to his liver. And he was very yellow all over. And he was very thin. And he was smiling and and smiling was extraordinary. So he sat there on his bed. And I came, and my friend Will, another one of the Dharma teachers, was sitting up on his bed with him. And then he just grabbed me in this great hug and started kissing and kissing and kissing me. And at first I thought, oh my God, his wife's just outside in the room next door. What's happening here? And then he grabbed my friend Will and wrapped his hands around him and started kissing him and kissing him. You know, kisses on the lips. Big kisses. And so there we were. And we were all laughing. It was extraordinary. And he said, he sat there and he said, Radha, it really is all right. Meaning dying really is all right.
That's beautiful.
So there he was, knowing that he would never see us again, being very steady with all that he knew he had to face in the next 24 hours. He knew that he was going to die very soon. And yet he was saying to me, don't be sad. It really is all right. This is equanimity. And when it reaches this level, it's divine in its quality. That kind of steadiness is divine. It's precious. It's beautiful. It was so inspiring to see the really dignified way that he faced everything he needed to face. He had a child who was autistic, and so it was very difficult. He'd been the main carer for him. It was difficult for him to say goodbye, to let go of that, and to realize he would no longer be able to look after his son. So there were many things that he had to let go of. And yet in that moment, in the last days of his life, there he was, absolutely full of love. Absolutely. He was radiant, sitting there saying, Radha, don't be sad, it really is okay. It's precious. But this is the divinity of equanimity, that in the face of death, we can say, okay. But not only that, in the face of death, he was full of love. So full of love that it was pouring out everywhere. Absolutely pouring out everywhere. It was extraordinary. It was such a beautiful experience. So that's freedom in the face of death. It's really letting go of everything. So let that inspire you to at least get through a sitting. So let's sit very quietly for a few minutes to end. So continuing to practice mindfully, continuing now the walking meditation. And just one PS, one additional note. I'm never ending with these instructions. Decide to do a particular method, and please do it for the whole session. Don't do 30 seconds of joy, 5 seconds of relinquishment, 2 minutes of something else, or you'll get yourself in a complete tangle. So you make a decision, sit down and work in a particular way, and you do it for the session. Not a bit of this and a bit of that, and here and there, or you'll end up quite confused. Thank you.